Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. A huge controversy brewed over when... Oh, before I do that, I have to say something important to keep us alive on the air, that the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. For more information, www.mecu.com. A report was released that has caused a lot of controversy, a lot of questions, and it is something we wanted to get to talk about on the air with people who are directly concerned with it, people who helped write this report and put it out, about teacher quality and how to judge teacher quality in our schools. And part of this report, and I'm just going to give you kind of a brief overview, and I'm probably going to get some of it wrong, and my guest will help me get it right once I do. But part of it has to do with there's an age-old argument about how you evaluate teachers. Should teachers be evaluated by the scores that students get on certain tests? Should certain teachers be paid more because they do a better job? Should certain teachers be paid more because of the subject they teach? How do you evaluate a good teacher from a teacher who's not good, who's not performing for our children in the schools? Should principals be allowed to judge that teacher performance and then let teachers go who are not performing in their schools? And there's a lot of rancor around this issue. And oftentimes you hear pro-reform group see teachers as self-interested and reeking of entitlement. And afraid of actual accountability will do. On the other hand, there are other people who have a thinly veiled contempt for teachers completely about who they are and what they stand for. So these lines are drawn. And the question is, can we get through the lines? We're going to talk about some of that this hour. We are joined in studio by Marietta English, who's president of the Baltimore Teachers Union. Marietta, welcome. Good to have you back in the studios.
Thank you.
Kate Walsh is president of the National Council on Teacher Quality and a member of the State Board of Education, correct?
That's right.
That's right. Make sure I have all that right. Lee Rutledge is a Baltimore City Public School teacher and a newly elected member of the Executive Board of the Baltimore Teachers Union. Good to have you with us, Lee.
Thank you very much.
And Zeke Berzoff-Cohen is a Baltimore City Public School teacher who I met a couple years ago when I spoke at his alma mater, Goucher. And I will say, as to reveal everything here that I like to do, transparency, that I was invited by Zeke to speak to his group of 13 or so teachers that gather to talk about issues in education and what they can do to improve education. He asked me to be a speaker. I was there the other night, so I just wanted to clear that up and put that out. Number here is 410-319-8888. Kate, let me begin with you. Talk about your perspective on this, the importance of this report and what it was. This is funded by Able Foundation, Casey Foundation, is that
no,
right?
No, it's largely funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
That's right.
And when we do this in a district, we always ask for a local foundation to chip in.
So that was Able.
That was Able.
Gotcha. I might make sure we have that straight too, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
So the recommendations are, did I have them right, or you want to kind of delineate what the major pieces of this are?
Well, I think you hit on one thing that I really want to emphasize, and that's the evaluation piece. Right now in the United States, very few teachers are being evaluated appropriately. We know from a number of studies that roughly 99% of all teachers get a satisfactory evaluation when they are observed, if they are observed. As we found in Baltimore and we have found in many other districts that we've looked at, very few principals comply with their obligations to evaluate a teacher on an annual basis. And here in Baltimore City, about half the schools were not evaluating all their teachers, only about half of them. About half of all teachers in the city were evaluated last year, as the district requires. So it's a real problem in this district, but it's a problem that's the same in districts all over the country. So it's not unique, but that doesn't make it any less of an urgent issue that Baltimore City needs to attend to.
Marietta, English, welcome again. So what was the biggest issue you had? In the Sun, when they wrote the story, they said there was no comment from you or the teachers union. So now they've had a chance to evaluate it. What is your comment?
Well, I think there are a lot of
I think, inaccuracies in that. I find it hard to believe that half the teachers weren't evaluated. But what I have, my issue is that we always want to evaluate out that teacher. I mean, even the article began with, we want to evaluate out that bad teacher. Like, these teachers get up in the morning and say, oh, I'm going to go to school and be a bad teacher. I would think that we would want our teachers to be evaluated as satisfactory or better. And if the principals are getting teachers that they need to evaluate, that they would provide some mentoring and some support for these teachers to help make them better. Let's not try to get rid of the teachers. Let's get rid of these teachers who are so bad out there, and we've offered them no support and no help and no mentoring to these teachers. And I think that's what I find. The report stated that there should be mentoring, and we certainly would agree with that, that there should be mentoring for these teachers who are new, who come through alternative ways, that they should be mentored. Even new teachers who come through traditional educational programs should be mentored. Teaching is not an easy job. It's not an easy profession. And today it's very difficult. And you have to master curriculum and discipline and all the things that go along with planning for these kids. All these things that go along with teaching. So why do we automatically say the articles are always negative about the teacher? Always negative. Let's evaluate them. Evaluate. We're glad that we will have a say in this new evaluation instrument, since it's going to be affecting
Kate,
teachers.
And then we'll turn to our teachers in just a second here. Kate?
Well, I can't emphasize strongly enough that this is about evaluating all teachers. Even great teachers seek feedback, and they're not getting it in this system. So this is not about a desire to dismiss teachers or go after bad teachers. This is about the need to know about the performance of the teachers in the school building. And if you are not evaluating all of your teachers, you can't separate the great from the good from the mediocre, and the mediocre from the very poor. Only 26 teachers in the system who were tenured last year were rated as unsatisfactory.
Out of 6,000 or so.
Out of 6,000 teachers. But that's just one problem. It's the other end of the spectrum that we think is even worse for the teaching profession, and that is that we do not know how to honor our best. We don't even know how to recognize our best.
And one of the things we're talking about here is, and if I have this correct, Alex, please correct me because I tried to read as much as I could before we got here today, is that one of the ways that this new system would evaluate teachers is on the basis of the standardized tests. Now, which standardized tests are we talking about? NAEP?
The Maryland test.
The Maryland test. So, mm-hmm. So I wonder how teachers feel about that. I mean, this is, and then this is also a question of the teachers. I think this reporter said she should be paid more. Correct?
Who do
well on these evaluations.
Right. We think the system faces a choice. It can give an across-the-board raise, which will not add up to a hill of beans for most teachers, or it can target its limited resources in order to pay good teachers substantially well, something it had better do because D.C. is down the road and it's going to be taking a lot of good teachers, as it's now going to be promising salaries of up to $140,000 to
That's
some
a big
teachers.
Promise to make.
It's a big promise, and Baltimore City's got to compete.
Gentlemen, how do you feel? Lee and then Zeke.
I think you mentioned that very few teachers get an unsatisfactory evaluation, and I think maybe one of the reasons that principals don't want to have those conversations with teachers is because we don't have a metric, at least in our city. And do I think it's possible? Yes. But we don't have a metric to tell the really great teachers from the really poor teachers. And not just in terms of thinking about a sixth grade art teacher or, you know, somebody who teaches a subject that doesn't have a standardized test. But even I don't think that there's very many experts out there that would say that you want to use a single standardized test score to evaluate a teacher. So if you combine these things and you start putting these things together to get a holistic picture of a teacher, I think we'd probably all be surprised at how fluid the picture of teachers are. I can be in the top quartile of teachers one year and in the bottom the next because of a lot of factors. And I think a lot of teachers are probably fluid in that mix. And I think that for me, as a union member and as a teacher, I think that we all know what that great teacher looks like. We all know who that teacher is. That's the person that you want your child in that classroom. And I think as a union member, I think we want all our members to be able to be that teacher. We want to be able to be that teacher. That's why we get up in the morning. We like doing what we do. We don't do it for the money. You know, we should be paid and compensated, but we're doing it because we want to make differences in children's lives. And so I think we need a system. You know, the mentoring parts of this report I think are really important in how we create new teachers that are going to be able to be successful. I don't think that the whole idea of – I don't think we have the capacity as a district to take a single test score or at this point a composite of test scores and peg it to a teacher in a single year and say you deserve to be removed.
I'm sorry.
Let's just see what Zeke has to say, and then let Kate come back.
Yeah, I agree with the.
Okay, can we get? I think we have a problem here with Zeke's microphone. So try again, Zeke.
I agree with the premise that.
I'm sorry. Let me pull that microphone over here. Something is not functioning. Pull that one over. I'm sorry, Zeke.
Any better?
Yes, yeah. Much better.
Okay. I agree with the premise that the current system for evaluation is broken. I have a very good friend who's a phenomenal teacher at a high school, neighborhood high school that's closing down right now. And he was rated satisfactory across the board. And his principal never stepped foot in his classroom. And I don't think he's the only one in Baltimore City who had that happen. And in the comments section, there were no comments. I think there's a lot of instances where principals don't do enough of their job in evaluating, and I do think there needs to be more accountability on both ends for how these evaluations are created and for how they're ultimately implemented.
I want to get to – go ahead, Kate. So I want to get to kind of the core of some of the issues here, and we have people calling in, some of whom are teachers. I want to get them on the air, 410-319-8888. They're coming from inside and outside the city, so –
Well, just 2 points in response to that. We do know from pretty solid research at this point that teachers are pretty stable in their performance, that they're consistently good, and they do not bounce around from top to bottom quartile by and large. There's a lot of bouncing around the middle. It's a lot harder to disaggregate those findings, but we do know that effective teachers are consistently effective. And the other point I want to make is the reason that principals do not hold teachers accountable is there no incentive for them to do so. Nothing turns on them doing that evaluation. So these are folks who have a million things put on their plate every day. Why bother doing an evaluation? It takes 2 years to dismiss a poor performing teacher if they do evaluate a teacher very low. And there's no incentive to say that you're a great teacher. There's nothing that turns on it. You get tenure automatically, practically. There's just no real incentive for any principal in this system to take evaluations. Seriously.
410-319-8888. Let me get a couple of callers in here that I really do want to kind of get down to brass tacks about what it means to evaluate a teacher. 50% of the evaluation, I think, is going to be the proposal is to evaluate that on the test.
No. It's 50% on student learning, and 30% of that must be the Maryland State test.
And then the other 20% is what?
To be determined by the local.
Okay, 410-319-8888. We'll come back to that.
But it cannot be the state test, the 20%. It must be other measures of student learning.
Like, what would that be from your experience?
Well, this is something the district has to decide. So it may be the district has to put in assessments of its own pre and post. It may be the district looks at an observation of a teacher and decides that observation is geared toward student learning. Right now, the observation instrument that's used in the city bears no relationship to whether students are actually learning. You can get there's only two measures, two ratings, satisfactory and unsatisfactory. So the system needs to redesign its instrument so it's geared towards student learning.
And then what's the other 50% based on?
That's entirely up to the district.
All right, so this is important. Then we'll come to the money aspect of this. 410-319-8888. Rachel, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I am in the corporate America nonprofit. My husband's a teacher. He's been teaching for about 20 years. And he and I go back and forth about this whole evaluation because it's very clear for me in my job and what I do, this criteria, what I need to succeed. And when I don't succeed, I manage people also. What it means to quote-unquote performance out those who are, quite frankly, poor performers and not solid players on a team. And talking to my husband about teaching and how they evaluate, I'm just so shocked of how this lack of accountability for teachers to, again, be recognized, as you said before, for being a star performer or for low performers to be incentivized to do better, or how to performance manage them out of the position, because some teachers are just there because they couldn't get a job somewhere else.
So how do you weed the good from the bad? How do you get the chaff from the wheat here? How do we do that? I mean, I get the teachers to talk about this for a moment, then come back. I mean, I think that this is, I mean, that all of us who have taught, and I taught for a while, and I was lived in a world of teachers for a long time. And it's you know as a teacher who the people are in your school who are doing the job and who are not doing the job. And every teacher's room has conversations about, why don't they get rid of so-and-so? They're just not doing it. But nobody ever does. That is part of the reality, whether we want to admit it or not. Zeke?
Yeah, I'll tell you. I really wish that teachers had more input into that evaluation process, because sort of like you're getting to, Mark, a teacher's worst enemy is a bad teacher. And I think we can all in this room agree that the most destructive thing for the kids, for the team, for the school, for everything, is a teacher that's not doing their job. So I really wish that when we talk about new models for how to evaluate teachers, that there could be some sort of a peer review system built in, and that teachers had a genuine opportunity to self-reflect, because so much of education is and should be about self-reflection and having input and buy-in into your own evaluation process, I think, would be valuable for people to look at themselves and say, you know what, where could I get better? Could I do better in classroom management? Could I be better at collaborative planning? Whatever it is, I wish that teachers were respected enough as professionals to have some input into that, and that it wasn't just imposed by reports or outsiders, but that teachers could really be a part of that process.
That's absolutely the case. And in fact, there's no way a principal could possibly evaluate well all of the teachers in his or her school building. So you really do want to have a model that takes advantage of your more senior faculty helping you do evaluation, or you also have a model where you bring in third-party evaluators from the central office who are there to validate and do random evaluations on teachers to make sure that the principal or whoever is doing evaluations accurately. So it's not a model that's exclusive to the principal.
I think the key is, as Mr. Cohen said, is to have teacher input. It is always done to us rather than with us. So if teachers had an opportunity, and I believe with this new legislation we'll have an opportunity to have input into the new evaluation. We, as a teacher myself, I always reflect on the day and say, what could I have done better? What could I have done differently to reach my children? And I think most teachers do that. When they, at the end of the day, you look back and you reflect on, how did today go? What did I accomplish my goals? And I think that's true of most teachers.
Go ahead.
Well, I heard Dr. Alonzo in the last hour refer to the fact that he believes that the vast majority of our teachers in this district are working very hard every day and are committed to seeing our students achieve. And I think that we wouldn't have made the gains we've made if that wasn't true. And, to think about trying to, as this report suggests, push the rewards to this top 15%. I mean, good luck running a district with 15% of your teachers. You need the vast majority of teachers on board doing great work with kids every day. And, you make that point that every teacher's worst enemy is a bad teacher. Your own enemy as a teacher is being a bad teacher. It's too hard of a job to go in there and be bad every day.
But let me ask this question. That sounds good. Now, I understand what you're saying, Lee, but the vast majority, what we have in the school system are young teachers like the two of you.
That's the majority.
Who have been in there for 2-3 years or so. Then we have another body of teachers who have been there for 25 years, 20-odd years or more, of the generation of people who went into teaching because they loved the idea of being a teacher a long time ago and they stayed there forever. I really do believe that. and we can talk about
that's why we started.
But
those of us who've been there 30 years believed we were going to be there for 30
But you
years.
Have a body of people who, and I'm going to say this on the table, and you can agree or disagree with this. Let me just throw it out here. And then you have a body of people who, there was a period of time, and a lot of studies have shown, that we had people going into education because they had nowhere else to go. Because it was the easiest way to get through to get your bachelor's degree. And you went off and taught. I'm putting it, usually saying it's you. But then you went off and taught.
Hope not.
No, I'm not. You know that. But then you go off and you taught. And that was part of where our problem existed. And then we started taking money out of our urban school systems, not paying attention to them because they became mostly black and poor and Latino poor and nobody really cared. But now we care again all of a sudden. So we want to make this work. We're tired of seeing our children fail. We're tired of seeing our prisons fill up with people who should be doing something else with their lives. And that's part of the reality. So the question is, how do you get to the point where you ensure that the teacher quality is where it is? And what, the question I have for you, Kate, talk a bit about how you – and we'll go back to Tom and Kareem and Adam, the next three callers up. How do you – how do you ensure that – I mean, that's not the way I want to ask the question. Is it a contradiction to ensure that by saying that if you get X percentage on this evaluation, then your salary is going to go up when someone else is not? What dynamic does that foster, A, in a school? And B, does that mean that, say, that if we're only testing on these tests for reading and math for the most part, history teachers, I talked to a group of teachers at night, and history teachers, science teachers were saying, nobody cares about what we do anymore in our classroom because we're not on the test. So it doesn't count. Art and music teachers, we're short shrifted. Doesn't make any difference what we teach. So, I mean, I can see another problem brewing with the attempt to make things better.
Well, one thing we do know now is the current system is not doing the profession.
Amen to that. I agree. Right.
So we are all struggling with the notion of what it will take to improve teacher quality. And in doing so, we have to figure out to reward effectiveness. And it's not like the effectiveness formula has been figured out and everybody's ready to go. This is a period of experimentation. It's also a period of great fear on the part of teachers and lack of confidence in the ability of districts and just – excuse me? It is a period of great fear among teachers because they know districts often don't get this right. So that's entirely understandable. Mm-hmm. But the notion that we should keep things the same is just not – it's just not an answer. When you look at the impact of a teacher on a child, and we know this pretty – we know this for a fact. If you take three first graders of equal ability and you assign them to a first grade classroom with a very ineffective teacher and the second one with a teacher of average ability and the third one with a highly effective teacher, the difference in outcomes year in, year out from having those teachers of different quality is enormous. So the child who gets assigned consistently ineffective teachers, which is too often our children who are poor and minority, will end up by eighth grade will be reading at the fourth grade level. The child who is assigned to the average teacher at eighth grade will be reading at the eighth grade level. And the child who is assigned a consistently effective teacher who is producing 1.5 years growth each year is producing a child who can read at the 12th grade level. So we're talking about monumental differences. But we're also talking about a profession that does not respect the ability of some teachers to achieve those differences. I am not proposing that any evaluation system be premised on test scores alone. Obviously, a lot of teachers don't even have test scores. In fact, most teachers do not have test scores. So the notion that you could do that is just impractical, nor is it something that's very desirable. But we all know who are these highly exemplary teachers. We know who our superstars are. And for our failure to compensate them for being exceptional, I think, is one of the profession's great weaknesses.
And how do teachers take that last comment as we open the phones here again? What does that mean to you when you hear that?
Well, as a teacher of several, many, many students in several years, I know that these three first graders come from different backgrounds, and it's not that they all have the same. When they go home, they're not all experiencing the same thing. Did the one first grader have and was exposed to 5,000 words as the one that is exposed to 500 words? There's a lot around that background. But yes, so as a teacher of one, who of a first grader who only has been exposed to 500 words, you now have a whole lot more work to do than the one who's been exposed to 5,000 words. So it's a lot more to being effective. But, you know, there's some things about teaching that you can't measure. For example, I'll tell you a story. A little girl, I met this young woman coming out of Macy's the other day who said to me, "Miss Cook, well, I knew she was from a long time ago because I've been married 40 years, so I taught her a long time ago." She said, "You were my best teacher. I learned so much from you." Can't measure that. I have lots of stories like that. Those are things that you cannot measure. That, yes, I was an effective teacher. But those are things you can't measure. I think a lot of what our young teachers are saying, they need these groups to talk about. I had friends of mine, because we all went together to college to talk about teaching. So we would get together and talk about, what did you do with your first graders? What did I do with my second graders? What do we do? So we had those groups because we were there in college together. I think that's what was missing with those teachers who you talked about who just went into teaching because they had nothing else to do, because they didn't have a group of friends that they could use to support. That's what we're trying to get now, support for these young teachers and these new teachers who are coming in to make them effective.
But the question was, what I was trying to get to is, what about the idea of teachers who are evaluated as being superior teachers being paid more money than other teachers? How do you think that would affect your profession?
I think it would. Okay, but let the teachers.
Zeke and then Lee.
I guess I'm not convinced by merit pay. I haven't seen enough evidence to make the case really strongly either for it or against it. Pay is not why I'm in the teaching profession. That being said, I think teachers on the whole should get paid a whole lot more than they do currently. I think one of the elephants in the room, I think the national dialogue right now is very centered on teacher quality, and, you know, this report speaks to it, and I think it's a very, very important piece. You know, you mentioned the gap that exists between a student who has a high quality teacher versus a student who has a low quality teacher, and I think that is really important in how a child learns and how a child is able to come up. But I think the missing piece in all of this is, how are we supporting families, and what else is going on in this picture besides just the teacher in the room? I think that a lot of times it's really difficult for a teacher to be effective unless they feel like they're part of a larger structure that's effective in a school. And I also think that the piece we're missing, again, in this national dialogue, is that in low-income communities, families are not supported by the schools. And I don't read anything about that in these kinds of reports. I read a lot about what the teachers are doing, what the system is doing. I wish the conversation were more around how can families become a part of this process. What I see a lot is there's this adversarial relationship between schools and families. And I think a big piece of this, to get really high-quality teachers, to get really high-quality students, we need to break down that relationship. And there needs to be much more support going on for families. I think it's really hard to teach a child who comes from a house with lead paint poisoning, whose parent just lost a job. There's a lot of factors which go into how a kid learns. And for some reason, they're not being spoken about enough right now.
We have to take a very brief break, and we'll let you come back, Lee, and then we're going to go to the phones. And in this order, folks, you've been holding a long time, Tom, in Middle River. We're going to come to your call, Karima in Baltimore, Adam in Cockeysville, and Liz in Baltimore, 410-319-8888, as we discuss the National Council on Teacher Quality Report, changing the evaluation system of teachers in our public school systems in the state of Maryland, and what its effectiveness will be or not be. 410-319-8888. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by Johns Hopkins Medicine. Find out more at www.hopkinsmedicine.org. We are talking about the National Council on Teacher Quality Report. We are joined in studio by Kate Walsh, who is president of the National Council on Teacher Quality, and she's a member of the Maryland State Board of Education. Marietta English is president of the Baltimore Teachers Union. Lee Rutledge is a Baltimore public school teacher and executive board member of the Baltimore Teachers Union. Zeke Berzov-Cohen is a Baltimore public school teacher. The number here is 410-319-8888. Lee, your time to comment. Kate will have a response to what the two of you said, and then we'll go right to the phones.
Well, and, you know, I think we have a tendency to focus on a lot of the stuff that is exciting to disagree about. And I think a lot of this report in terms of the what we do to make and find teachers and support them and make them better in terms of making a real evaluation and in terms of mentoring and support is stuff that we could very much agree about. But I think that one of the interesting points about the point you made earlier to illustrate about the first grader that has three consecutive low-performing or three consecutive high-performing teachers is the fact that it's three consecutive. And to your point of there's a lot more going on here, I think – the idea of just rewarding the outstanding teacher soft sells the degree to which teaching, while it's incredibly individual and can be very lonely at times, being in front of that classroom, the only adult in the room sometimes, it's still really a team sport. And you need a functional school. And you need effective team members to really serve a child through their whole life. If I'm an outstanding first grade teacher and I send them to a bad second grade classroom, there's not much I can do about it. It's three consecutive. So the idea of just rewarding the top tiniest percentage of teachers, I think, is not giving the respect to our profession that we deserve. We need to work together and we need to serve all students.
Kate Walsh.
Well, we're taking one strategy that we've recommended, which is that the system find a way of honoring its very best teachers in the form of chairs, similar to the chair model that's used in higher education, so that when you look at – when you're a prospective teacher, you are very much attracted to the idea that it is possible to go in and earn a very healthy income into teaching. So that's one thing – one strategy you can do to improve – improve the caliber of people going into teaching is to make it more lucrative, and that's acknowledging that teachers do not go in for the money. That's not the case, but they certainly leave because of the money. Very often, you get to the point where you need to buy a house and you can't afford to buy a house. So there's lots of evidence that while teachers are not primarily motivated by money, over time, that certainly drives a lot of their decision making. Especially men are more apt to leave the profession. The difference between a very ineffective teacher and an effective teacher is an ineffective teacher will, on average, produce half a year's gain, and a very effective teacher will produce a year and a half's gain. And that's consistent through the research. So it's disastrous when a child who is, as Marietta noted, a child who comes from a home where there's very little spoken English and a child is not getting what they need at home, that for that child to get assigned that teacher who is going to only add a half a year's gain is disastrous. So I think we have to be particularly attentive to the needs of children who come from poverty, because it won't matter that a child gets an ineffective teacher out in Howard County so much, because the parents will pay for a tutor. Here in the city, it's a decision that you're going to destine a child to be a productive citizen one day or a child who is unemployable.
I'm going to tackle this point, but let me go to the phones, as I promised. We'll come back to that. 410-319-8888. Tom in Middle River, you've been holding on forever. You're on the air. Thanks for waiting.
Hi. These are just a few comments. We talked about earlier about one of the teachers making upwards of $100,000. I wanted to focus on the grade school level, and I wondered what the teachers' opinions are. You all recognize when there's an outstanding teacher. You can tell who the mediocre ones are. I mean, what would be wrong with paying a third grade teacher $75,000, $100,000, when if you think about it, they're the ones that are forming the young minds who perhaps go on later in life to you know, succeed very well in medicine or science or what have you. I mean, you look at some mediocre teachers that perhaps are teaching physics that are making twice or three times more. I don't mean to keep focusing on just the money, but I really do think a lot of these mediocre teachers can become much better if they have some incentive. Just a few things to think over. Thank you.
Let me come back and tackle what you said. I think there's another caller here right behind you who's been waiting a long time who also has a comment about the money aspect of it. Let me get her comments, then we can wrestle with all that. I think this is part of the crux of the matter for a lot of people. 410-319-8888. Karima in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Good evening.
Good evening,
Karima. I have a few comments pertaining to the statement about teachers can't buy homes. Can't buy homes where? Is it that they do not want to live where they work? So now we're paying people to continuously pimp the poor? Are you serious? How about let's focus on the children? If that's our focus, then take that money and give them the tutors. If we know that Howard County's parents can't afford to pay for tutors, how about give the inner city children tutors? But wait, we don't do that. We cut the after-school program to help the children once they make the game so they fall back into the holes. We don't keep those programs going to keep the kids where they need to be. How about tell the teachers where the children are? These arbitrary tests that test everything, tell me what I'm starting with. Do they know how to add? Do they know how to multiply? Do they know how to divide? Can they read? Do they have phonics? And then take that information and then get them tutors. The idea, I don't really, as an educator, because I am, when I've been doing this for 12 years, not damn sure I ain't mediocre. Let's be clear about that. But they're right. There are other factors that are affecting our children. Why now, which the gentleman brought up, the push, the urban poor was none of your concern until a lot of these elites need employment? Because what I'm noticing is the influx is not about the kids. It's about money. But who wants these salaries? See, these are my questions. I do think that this whole evaluation process, it can definitely be tweaked. But let's get back to what's really important, and that's our children. And there are other ways to do it. And, yes, teachers should be paid more. No question about that. We live in a capitalistic society. We need money to do the things that need to be done, to live from day to day. How about fix some of these raggedy schools that the children have to wear coats in the winter, like mine, school 85, and we're dying in the summer. We can't open windows. We don't have air conditioning. By the way, Miss Walsh, does your office have air conditioning? How about put that money into putting some window units into these buildings? These children are suffering on so many levels, and throwing money at the problem is not going to fix it. And this game that you're playing, you will pay for, because you will pay for the children who will meet you in the alleyways and you go to your car. Don't blame the teachers. This is a society issue that needs to be addressed.
Karima, thanks for your call. Tom and Karima were sort of on the same wavelength, but let's kind of wrestle with what we've just heard from two people who I kind of assume are both teachers, one city, one not. Who wants to? I mean, so the question, I think part of it is this question of, it really does come down to evaluation equals money for a lot of people. And then we can talk about some of those sub things that was just said around it. Evaluation equaling money. I think that is going to be the toughest nut for, I think, your group, Kate Walsh, to convince teachers and citizens that that's where we should go. On the other hand, the teachers have to kind of deal with and address the issue of how do you evaluate so good teachers are there and bad teachers are not. So
okay.
Let me just start with Kate, then we'll come over with the first question I asked.
Well, it's a little bit odd. But the report dealt very little with the issue of compensation. So it noted that Baltimore City does not keep up with surrounding districts, and so it's losing teachers in that capacity. There is a 38% attrition rate in the city of teachers after 3 years. So it has a very serious, what appear to be a very serious attrition problem, though we don't have any data on the quality of the teachers that are leaving. So if the city, this issue before the city becomes, what do you do to keep teachers? Certainly money is always a consideration. And in matching that, in solving that problem, you've got to solve it in a way that's realistic. I agree that a mediocre teacher, I think, is not going to be made any better by the promise of a $2,000 bonus at the end of the year. I'm not going to work harder. You're not going to work harder. No one in this room is going to work harder if they have the lure of a $2,000 bonus. And that's pretty much the basis of the merit pay experiments that have taken place across this country. And they haven't shown to be very effective. So I think that we need to look for other strategies. And I think the strategy that's being pursued in Washington, D.C. is the one that holds the most promise because it solves a problem that none of the previous merit pay experiments have solved. And that is, how do you attract more people into the profession who have talent and skills? And that's what the profession is not doing. And the only one strategy for solving that is to bring in a much higher pay scale.
Let me just ask a quick question while we turn to Marietta and the other two guests. The when you just said that was you didn't say the most important. You said it was not the most significant part of the report in terms of mm-hmm. pay. What do you consider the most significant parts of the report that we're missing?
That teachers are not properly evaluated, and that's not having all to do with pay. That has to do with whether or not you give a teacher tenure. It decides whether a teacher gets support. Decides whether a teacher should be dismissed. It decides it should be the basis upon which you make any decision regarding a teacher. And right now, the system is such that you wouldn't want to base any decision on what we're learning from the evaluations at this time.
And part of that is, if I'm correct, that part of the report is that teachers, from what I read, that teachers, if the system was functioning correctly, that principals would have the right to dismiss a teacher who was not performing if their evaluations did not meet muster.
Well, that issue is a little bit more complicated. What we do say in the report, it is far too difficult to dismiss a teacher, and that's due to Maryland state law. It is very complicated. It generally takes about 2 years to dismiss a teacher in the system. And that's not good for kids, and it's not good for other teachers in a school building. So it has it's tremendously demoralizing to have a teacher that everybody recognizes should not be in the classroom. So that will require some changes in state law. But Baltimore City should get high praise for its policy of not allowing not forcing principals to accept teachers they do not want. And that's only one of four or five school districts in the country that is doing that.
Now, Marietta, are you?
Well, I wanted to comment on our CEO district, which we had 10 schools, and talk about bonding. Every teacher and everybody in the school was responsible for this growth of that school. So everybody who, once they reached their goals or their test scores that they increased, everybody in that school was compensated. Everybody, from the secretary to the custodian, principal, everyone. So if that way we all worked collectively to make sure our children achieved in all grade levels. So I think it is possible to have student achievement and be compensated for that when we have the entire school working towards that. And you won't have just one person being out there alone on a ship trying to have the children achieve, as Lee said. You need everybody working towards that.
Do you think that made teachers work harder in that building?
Oh, I do think it made them work harder because everybody was responsible for the achievement of their students, not only the teachers, but the secretaries paid more attention, the custodians, everybody in that school paid more attention to the achievement of their student because they knew everybody was responsible. Everybody would get a piece of the bucket of money if the students achieved. So, yeah, I do believe it made them work harder. But you did make another comment about everybody in the school knows who shouldn't be in the school, and I don't necessarily think that was true. I know if you're in your classroom, as they said, and you're alone, you're doing what you think is best, so you really may not know that the teacher down the hall is not doing her job. It's just hearsay that you have. And I think sometimes principals have a little too much power if they don't like a person because they don't like their name or because that person is an outspoken person, then it doesn't matter whether or not they're an effective teacher. It's just that I don't want this person in my school because they are outspoken and they may be a troublemaker.
Gentlemen, do you have any quick comments of what we've just talked about before we move on to the next caller?
Sure.
Either one?
I think
go for it.
Lee. I think your point about the evaluation system now and your point really go together. I mean, I think it is a little bit arbitrary right now. You know, it has the framework to be good, but I'm excited about the possibility of teachers working with the district to actually have – I mean, I would love nothing more than to use student data and student performance. I mean, the thing that I want to know, the question I want answered when I'm evaluated is, am I good for the kids and how good am I? And I think teachers would welcome a real answer, but teachers have to be able to trust
good.
That
Let me
data.
Just ask you the question, what's a real answer? What does that mean?
I don't think we have the capacity right now to measure every kind of teacher that we have with test scores. I mean, you know, she says it's left up to the district, but we don't have a data system right now that has the capacity. What right now we would leave it up to the opinions of principals, which is kind of the system we have. Principals could come up with a really innovative way to use data right now to evaluate teachers. In many cases, they don't. If we had a data system that we could trust, that teachers could trust and buy into, that actually gave us meaningful feedback about our kids' growth, and teachers bought into that and trusted it, I think you could start to have these conversations about which teachers got rewarded in which way. But right now, we don't have that system in place, and we need that capacity.
Zeke, very quickly.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you that there's not a strong system in place. Also, just to get back to, I think, the larger point that the earlier caller, Karima, was trying to make, I think one of the missing things here is that inner city schools, Baltimore City schools, get shafted in a big way, no matter how you cut it. And I think that pertains to our country's legacy of racism and classism. And personally, when it comes to incentive, I care more about the conditions of my building and whether the building is dilapidated, which at the school I was teaching at last year, it was. Whether, you know, my kids have after-school programs. I care more about those things than I do an additional $4,000. And personally, I'd like to see that money targeted to the school rather than to my paycheck. And again, I think that teachers on the whole should get paid a lot more.
410-319-8888. Taylor, you're on the air.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, Taylor, you're on the air.
Okay. I think one of the things that everybody is missing is discipline. That might separate mediocre and good. And very often the good teacher gets the better set of children to work with, thinking that this teacher can move these youngsters along, whereas perhaps a mediocre or a teacher who's new or who hasn't been exposed to education for long doesn't have that advantage, and there is very little information, very little training in how to manage a class successfully. And that can make the difference between an excellent teacher who does a wonderful job with the curriculum, but if she can't control the class, if she can't motivate the class, it's no good. And the problem with doing the test scores is we had a problem with one of the schools doing some things they shouldn't be doing. That might encourage the wrong kind of emphasis on teaching. And I agree with the gentleman that says that we need to upgrade the schools and look at those things first, and also upgrade the wraparound services that are available to parents. Parents who are looking for outside agencies to help them with discipline and those kinds of things. They need to come first.
Taylor, thank you. I wonder if this discussion we've had today, you could do much more than an hour on this, and perhaps we should over seriously. This is going to be an ongoing conversation in our state. Whether or not these kind of conversations, Kate, like the one we're having this evening, kind of represent in some ways a broadening of how we need to look at evaluation than what we're doing now, whether it's the way we've been doing it, but also the way that is being proposed in your report.
Well, I think I'd like to address the notion that we need to attend to the facilities, improving the facilities, and we need to make sure we have after-school activities. And that was very much the push for the last 15, 20 years. That was certainly – I'm not saying it was solved at all. Obviously, it was not solved. But that was the emphasis. So this attention to teacher quality is relatively new. And it's relatively new because it's only recently that we learned just how important it is to have a highly effective teacher teaching children who come from high poverty or are themselves minority. So I think that it would be a mistake for us not to understand the tremendous importance of making sure that the best quality teacher workforce is here in the city. Because, yes, the city has a history of being dumped upon, or however you put it, but what's most important to this discussion is, are we doing whatever we can to put high-quality teachers before children? And I know that those surveys that have looked at this issue say what teachers care most about is having good colleagues around them. That inspires them, that helps them to work hard, and is supporting. So I think that if you had to look at one factor of a school environment that makes the most importance to teachers, it's the quality of not just the teachers, but also the principal and the secretary and the janitor. It's that a place is high functioning, and that's all we're talking about here.
Mary, we have less than a minute left.
Well, I would agree that you do need a high functioning school. You need everybody to be working together. It takes, you hate to say that whole cliche, it takes a village to raise a child, but it takes everybody in that school to make sure that all of our children achieve. If you're having difficulty with Johnny, maybe Mary Kate can help Johnny today. Well, so it takes everybody to work together.
We hope this is just the beginning of this discussion on the show. And I do want to thank Kate Walsh for coming up here to do this program today. Marietta, same to you. Thank you so much for being with us.
Always a pleasure.
Lee Rutledge, good to meet you.
Nice to
meet
you.
Welcome to the studio.
Thank you.
And Zeke Berzov-Cohen, thanks so much for coming in at the last minute here. We just called you today. Good to have you here.
Thanks a lot, Mark.
I want you all to stay tuned. Deborah Owens is on her way. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite, Baltimore's free monthly magazine of ideas and innovation. This month, Urbanite writers look at the gritty facade of some of the city's tougher neighborhoods. What they find might surprise you. Urbanite is available at over 800 locations and online at www.urbanitebaltimore.com. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Christina Arison. We're engineered by Brian Boone. Our interns are Stephanie Mavronis, Richard Good, and Felicia Faison. Our theme music is by Walt Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear new shows you don't hear on the radio, and find out information on the subjects we talk about, visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.